It's Wednesday, August 28th, and there's so much amazing stuff happening.
I will start with Tesla, and I'm going to start with what is probably some good news for Tesla, because I love bad news about Tesla, and there's a lot of that afterwards. So, full self-driving, level 5, that is the holy grail, and Musk says we're going to get there. We're close. But a lot of other people say we're a long way from that. Who's right? Well, we have maybe some more information.
Antech has Hot Chips 31, Tesla's solution for a full self-driving. So this is the hardware reveal. That custom hardware that they were talking about for years, and then we sort of mocked them, and it's like, look, there's all kinds of stuff out in the open market. Why would you come up with your own hardware? Well, here it is. It's a picture of the hardware. Now, they didn't demo it in full level 5 mode. They demoed, I think, level 4, but level 4 was fully operational.
They did talk about a lot of the reasons they did their own, and a lot of it had to do with power consumption and thermal properties, because, you know, you can't have it overheating. It can't ever overheat.
Can't overheat in Phoenix.
And, the power stuff has to do with kind of breaking it down into individual modules to meet how the power draw demands and stuff like that. How quickly it can put all that together, because in full self-driving, it has to be really quick. So they answered a lot of those questions. It's like, here's why we did it. Here's what we did. Here's all the problems we ran into, and here's how we tried to overcome them. But again, no level 5.
Nope, not yet, anyway. There's actually a lot of really interesting stuff at Hot Chips. The most interesting thing for me was the company that had the giant wafer size AI chip that didn't care about defects. Like, they designed it so that, you know, the entire wafer is a chip, and the entire wafer is going to have defects. But the chip was designed in such a way that it could work around defects. So that was innovative. This Tesla thing...
Well, moving from 3 to 4, I mean, that's not something to sneeze at.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the direction we've got to be moving, so we can't put it down. It's an achievement. I don't know how it compares to what everybody else was doing. Like, did NVIDIA get to level 4? I'm not sure about that.
No, nobody is at level...
Haven't seen these on the road.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is... I'll believe this is level 4 when I actually see it, not in a demo video on the screen.
I'm just going to do a little rearranging here. So, that was the good news, but there was a lot of bad news about Tesla. Now, I'm going to consolidate some stories here because this kind of rolled out over a number of days. First, there was Walmart. Walmart had solar roofs installed by SolarCity. SolarCity, right?
Yeah.
And SolarCity was purchased by Tesla. And one of those deals that seemed a little...
sketch?
Nepotism, if not incest. And that's been, you know, critiqued by a lot of people. Well, there was a little bit of a problem. Some of those roofs burst into flames.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, probably just it was installed wrong and... You know, this is definitely not the fault of SolarCity. This is not a thing that happens everywhere. But wait.
Amazon joins Walmart in saying that Tesla's solar panel caught fire. So it turns out that Walmart has been working with Tesla since 2018, and a lawsuit has been filed. Am I getting ahead? I might be getting a little bit ahead. There's a lawsuit involved with all of this.
So we find out that both, and you know, this happened a lot. And it wasn't very uncommon. And actually, one of the Walmarts, they disconnected the roof.
And it still caught on fire.
And it still burst into flame. They also found out when they filed the lawsuit and brought in some external people that there had been a small short that had caused a little tiny fire that just put itself out before they came to fix the roof the first time.
Yeah.
And Tesla just chose not to tell them about that. Or SolarCity. And then,
it's fine.
On top of all that, we get this from the Business Insider.
Okay, yeah, this is what I was looking for. So, last year, Tesla initiated Project Titan, a nationwide program to replace solar panel parts that could cause fires. So, it was like a solar controller and an Amphenol connector.
Yeah, the connector was the part that would burst into flames. Now, you left out a word there. Stealth. Stealth program. Meaning that at some point, SolarCity and Tesla knew that these roofs were a problem. And they chose to just creep out and fix them.
There was a comment from... There were two problematic comments from somebody at Tesla. One of them was the engineers... Like, there's an app that you run on your phone, apparently. And so, like, the Walmart managers were expected to run an app on their phone, and whenever there was a problem with their roof, just report it to Tesla, and, like, we'll come fix it. And so he's like, look, they didn't report that there was any kind of a problem with their roof, so we didn't come to fix it. We didn't know. And then the other thing was somebody from Tesla, I think, said that the failure rate here is less than 1%, but it was 7 Walmarts out of 240, which is quite a bit more than 1%.
Yeah, and that's... A Walmart burning is a lot of danger to a lot of people.
One of the Walmarts was closed for 8 days, which I imagine Walmart takes very seriously.
Oh, that's got to be at least like $16 million, right?
Yeah.
So they had spokespeople from Tesla responding to this, but they also had some people who were speaking and anonymously as employees of the company. And the picture they painted was, it wasn't so much that it was malicious. It's just that... It's the things that we've seen from other leaks of Tesla. It's just like, you have no idea the madness. And it's like...
It's just pure chaos.
And they actually made the pun, we're constantly putting out fires. And no one knows what's going on.
Well, if they want to spin off SolarCity into its own thing that manages like supply chain and crap like that, I'll be glad to handle that as long as there's no interference from anybody else outside the organization. Because they can make money. It's a profitable product. This is literally just a management problem.
They couldn't make... SolarCity was its own thing. It failed. They bought it to save it from failing, which was probably illegal.
It's fine. The technology's caught up. The technology's moved on. Everything from China is so much cheaper now, so it's fine.
Well, electric vehicles, though...
Oh, wait, tariffs.
We should point out that electric vehicles are not just Tesla. We have some more coming onto the market. And we have them in some use cases that I certainly found this one surprising and pretty cool.
Electric dump truck produces more energy than it uses. Lisa, in this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics. No, what it is the truck drives to the top of the hill or the top of the quarry unloaded. It gets loaded with rocks. And then it uses regenerative braking to capture all of the energy going downhill fully loaded. So
it's massive. It's like 110 tons unloaded. So you can imagine those brakes are generating quite a bit of electricity. So pretty cool. I wonder how many cycles you think that battery can handle like that.
It should be on the order of hundreds, but maybe more.
Hundreds isn't that many. What do you think it's doing, like three a day?
I'm thinking probably. I mean, probably not a lot. I'm thinking like cell phone batteries, where it's good for about 300 to 600 charges. Definitely not more than 1,000.
That's going to be an expensive... I mean, it's got to be a big battery, right? Yeah. But the torque that thing requires to go uphill?
Yeah, it might be a different battery technology.
So, anyway, still pretty cool. Still a step in the right direction to when we can finally have electric cars that I actually want. Amazon, if you don't know, they bought Audible, the company that sponsors every podcast in the world, except this one. And
it would sponsor this one. It's just DIY. Like, we have to go sign up for it, then give you guys a code, and then you use the code to do stuff. And
it's commission, though, right?
Gosh darn it. Just join Patreon. Look, we're lazy. Or buy something from the Level 1 store. We got some really cool shirts and water bottles and all kinds of stuff.
So Audible... You know, they do Audible books, audio books. And we talked about audio books last week. We had a lot of comments about people who said they listen to audio books. So I guess they're popular. And it's interesting because they're looking to add a new feature. And it raises the question of, if I'm generating content from my content that just happens to match your content, is that infringement?
Top U.S. publishers sue Amazon's Audible for copyright infringement. What, pray tell, is going on? Well, Audible is adding closed captioning to their audiobooks so that you can read the captions while you hear the audio.
Which is... That seems crazy.
Isn't that like reading the book?
Yeah.
Like, you have the book.
But what... In what... Like, why would you be listening to Audible with a screen in front of you? I guess in your level 4 Tesla?
Yeah. I mean, while you're driving. But apparently that's some type of copyright infringement.
Now, do I understand this correctly that Audible is not using the original text? Are they using like speech to text to generate that?
That's what they said, yeah.
So it's not necessarily the copyright material, but it's going to be damn close, if not identical, if done perfectly.
Yeah, but doesn't Audible have the license to do the audiobook version?
That's what I'm thinking. If they're simply taking their product and then putting it through the algorithm that then generates the third product...
Isn't that just format shifting?
Is this something that we want the court system to decide on?
Is this something taxpayer dollars is going to be spent on deciding?
So many. So many taxpayer dollars. Yeah. We've talked about Google a lot, and every recent story about Google that isn't "we need to break them up" is the internal staff being angry about one thing or another.
Yeah.
And it turns out that, from what we've seen at least, the internal Google staff has become insanely political.
I wonder why.
You know who's not a fan of that?
Google doesn't want staff debating politics at work anymore. It's like literally the War Games movie where, you know, the Whopper finally decides at the end the only winning move is not to play. Something we decided on the Level 1 forums a long time ago. Yeah, so Google doesn't want staff debating politics at work because... it's a mess. It's a real mess. Of course, everybody's complaining about that now.
Everybody disliked that. So, yeah, the big thing about Google that they've always touted is the open workplace, right? You can air your grievances and you can post things. They have that internal message board. And so...
it's literally the Monty Python skit where it's like, we're going to have open intellectual debates. And by the end of it, they're just rolling around in the mud.
Basically, yeah. So now Google is saying, no, no, we're still open, but when you post your, you know, anti-Trump rhetoric, your 5 paragraphs of hate, or your anti-I stuff, and then it starts this big argument and nobody's working, we don't want that. Can we try to avoid that? And the employees so far don't seem to be going for it. So we'll see how that works out.
Oh, Lord.
I think it does make sense to try to get the workplace as apolitical as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't really fault Google for that.
Gonna have to have... that's fine, but that's gonna have to go all the way to the top. We can't have Eric Schmidt sending emails that are like, we're here to support Hillary. We can run her campaign for her or just send over bathtubs of cash, whatever.
Or donating money, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think they'll give that up. Yeah. How old's your phone?
It's pushing 2 years. It's like 16 months or so. I gotta get a new one soon.
Mine's very old.
Yeah.
I don't know how old mine is. Like 5 years old, right?
Is it? I don't know.
It's the Droid.
Maybe.
It's pretty old. And seems like we're right there. I mean, the average between the two of us, we're right where we belong.
Americans are waiting 3 years to replace their phone, studies find. New phones' features aren't enough to convince users to get yearly upgrades. Well, yeah, I mean, most modern phones are garbage. I took the G5 with me when I went to Taiwan because it's got the dual radios and the modular battery and stuff. And literally the screen came unglued. And the G5 is like 4 years old. But it's fine. If the screen hadn't come unglued, it would have been completely fine.
That's a big if. But yeah, I'm never using my phone and thinking, oh God, this ancient piece of junk, I need a new, hot new phone with new features and new cramware that I can't get rid of.
Yeah, the software, honestly, it feels like the software is stagnating and there are not a lot of really cool features and there's not a lot of innovation in the smartphone game. Like, you know, the new Note 10 is out, but there's not any substantial new features. There's enough, like, imagine a Note 10 where, like, there's a microphone in the pen so that you can use the microphone to make notations or whatever, and it's really good audio from that. And then you can use the pen for pen things, but you can also do video editing. And you can use DeX for docking your phone and making it a more like a laptop or a tablet experience. And then really getting the software right with those experiences, but... it's none of that. It's like we're going to waste all of our software R&D time on Bixby. No one wants that.
Yeah, and I don't think... I think we kind of have... the young folk, you know, the drivers of your hot sales are kind of moving away from the phone being the symbol of things, right?
Yeah.
Like, we've become, I mean, young people are communists. So they're not impressed by having the newest and the latest things anymore. It's cooler to be, to have old technology.
I'm doing everything on a Nokia 6300.
I'm so unique. Netflix. So Netflix had the star rating. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody liked it. And then they decided they didn't want that anymore because it was very useful. So they went to the thumbs up and thumbs down. And that's supposed to help figure out, help the algorithm tell you what to watch. And maybe that's not working either. So now we have a new iteration.
Netflix is testing human-driven curation with the launch of collections. And they've got some example collections there. There are even more examples in the article. You know, short and funny, or if you like this, you probably like that kind of thing. There's so much in the Netflix catalog that this was inevitable. Like, they can't, I don't think algorithmically they can do enough top-level organization for things and have it make sense.
Yeah. So, it's interesting. I wonder if they will ever reveal whose collection you're following. And then can you try and get more collections from that person? Or is it even one person? Because, like, Steam curation is kind of like that. You know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I agree with this person on games most of the time. Let's see what they like. Google Music does something like this, and they'll have a... It's not necessarily a genre, but they'll pick, like, just a description, like a one-line description. Or it's like, oh, heavy metal songs by indie pop, acoustic artists. And I find those really interesting. And I find that if I find you know, something I'm interested in, I like almost all of them. But they're so short. There's only maybe 20, 30 songs in each one of them.
Hmm.
So it's not... It's definitely not the AI doing it.
That intern didn't have enough time.
Exactly, yeah. And that might be an issue with these two. So we'll see. Remember the Apple credit card? It was amazing.
And
what made it amazing... Other than the fact they give it to you, even though, you know, you owe money to literally everybody, including the Chinese mafia, is that it's made of titanium. Wow, that's a status symbol, right? And it's very minimalist. It doesn't have anything but your name printed on it, so you can see that beautiful titanium finish. But wait.
Apple jeans. Apple card can be damaged by wallets and jeans. Yeah. So is there any, I mean, could there be a more quintessentially Apple headline? I mean, it's like, we're Apple. We're going to reimagine how credit cards work. We don't need numbers on the cards. It's all done electronically through the app. Oh, by the way, this card will, you know, just burst into flames and be weird and also be discolored and terrible.
I mean, what are the two places you store your credit cards?
Wallets and jeans.
And your pockets, yeah. And so that's just astonishing. That it doesn't work in that way. There's some great tweets at the bottom of this story. You know, people making fun of it. It's like, here's the outfit to wear.
My new Apple outfit.
Yeah. But the best one was the guy who talked about it. It's like, after using your Apple card, please return it to its uniformly lit white cube. but they do admit that... yeah, it will discolor. I mean, that doesn't make it not work, obviously. It doesn't affect the chip, but your beautiful titanium card will become the color of whatever you store it in.
Credit cards were literally made to be disposable and replaced every couple of years. Is this really the best way to use the world's supply of titanium?
Yeah, titanium, Jesus. Oh, this one was great, too. This Apple card cloth coming in 2020, $789. You can totally see them doing that.
Does anybody even have a wallet anymore? Everybody's got the clip that they use with their phone, obviously.
Well, that could be something they'd sell you. Yeah. Make it out of microfiber, and it just attaches. Yeah, that'd be perfect. Well, we talk about people adopting new phones, it's slowing down, and Apple is probably the company hurting the most from that because their whole thing is... You buy one every year. You got to be part of the cult, right? You got to do everything. And it's that time of year.
Apple readies camera-focused Pro iPhones, new iPads, and a larger MacBook Pro. So there's a bunch of leaks here. None of this is confirmed. We'll probably cover it again when it's actually released. Just know that if you're getting ready to buy a phone, maybe wait a couple of weeks. That's really all you need to know.
Yeah, they didn't have a ton of details about this, but I imagine they probably won't have a ton of new features because we really haven't heard anything new.
In fact, no, they won't.
That's probably just going to be more of the same.
Yeah.
A little bit faster. Camera might be a little bit better.
We have to call it Pro now, though. Pro.
Is it anything you're going to notice? Probably not. There might be a hot new color that you can only get this year. Now, phones, of course, have radios in them. And you might have never thought about this, but that means radiation in your pocket next to your genitals.
Is it ionizing? Is it not? We don't know.
Well, you know, some people will tell you one thing, others will tell you another. But that's why we have the good old FCC. And we can trust the FCC. We've learned that, right? Because the FCC will test every device that goes up, you know, for mass market sales, and they will make sure it stays within a certain range. But
turns out that the Chicago Tribune recently launched an investigation into the radio frequency radiation levels output by popular smartphones and found that some of Apple's phones are allegedly emitting radio frequency radiation that exceeds safety limits. So the FCC is going to go back and retest all of these phones. When Apple was asked about this, they said, and I quote, "You're holding it wrong." That was one of the things in the testing. They were like, you have to hold it a certain way. And so they did retest it. And when the phone has sensors that detect it's being held a certain way, it does actually lower its output radio frequency.
But what if you're laying down?
They did another test with a different phone. I think it was an iPhone 7. And they couldn't get it to detect that it was being held. So it was always just blasting it at a higher level. And so Apple said, well, you're doing something wrong in the test.
The 7 was the worst offender. Now, the most recent phone, that's not the X anymore, right?
No.
Or is it still?
No, it's like the, I don't know. I don't know what the latest iPhone. It's the newest iPhone.
Those did okay, including the X. But the 7, now, so the situation here is your phone probably isn't always doing this. This is a combination of
worst case scenario.
Bad signal in a bad location. And you actually talking on it for a long time. So that radio and the battery combination is such that it is doing everything it can to hang on to that connection. And it just ramps up the power. And by default, the radiation going into your skull.
And then brain cancer.
So, yeah. Apple did immediately respond to this. And they were just like, no, you're stupid. And
yeah.
I don't know. I guess that they also cited, they were like, listen, the FCC tested, it's fine. So
the FCC also said it was going to retest these, so we'll see.
You think Apple's on the Ajit Pai approved company list? He's mostly just telecoms, so.
I
think, you know, like AT&T and all those big companies, Verizon probably step in on behalf of Apple, right? That's a lot of their business.
Could be. Well, iPhone 7, though. What if the FCC found that only older iPhones have the radiation things? And then there would be like a, hey, come to Verizon, get $100 off the new iPhone that's not going to irradiate you.
All iPhones except for the iPhone Pro are extremely irradiated. So you must upgrade.
I don't think this is ionizing radiation, but it's still beyond the exposure limit, so still problematic.
Is that a risk we want to take?
No.
DoorDash. DoorDash got caught paying the driver's salaries from tips. Well, they used the tip to pay as much salary as possible. Then they paid the minimum on top of that, which betrays the whole idea of a tip. And the internet went crazy, and everybody did stories about it. And DoorDash came out, and they were like, oh, okay, you're right. You know what? We're going to stop doing that. But there's a problem.
That was a month ago, and they're still doing it. DoorDash is still pocketing workers' tips after almost a month after it stopped to promise. Promised to stop. There we go. getting a little low on the blood sugar over here. We've got quite a few more stories to go.
So they interviewed some of the workers, and I think they actually tested themselves because, you know, I mean, anybody can be DoorDash. So these reporters just sign up and do a couple of deliveries and see what's happening. And yep, turns out they are not paying tips, and they are radio silent on why that is, which is a pretty common tactic for big companies these days. It's just like, we're going to stop doing that. We're going to be better. And they never do it or never get better. So who knows? Last week we talked about Ice Lake, and it was kind of interesting because, okay, Intel finally has 10 nanometer laptops. That's something, right? They've finally done it. But that makes this headline really weird.
Intel's line of notebook CPUs gets more confusing with 14 nanometer Comet Lake. And the slide literally says 10th generation Intel Core processor Comet Lake. Up to 6 cores and 12 threads. LPDDR4X. Like, I don't know how we're even going to cover this on level one, because we've got, like, would you think that all the processors in a given generation are all the same lithography?
Clearly not.
Because they're not. There's a few notebook CPUs that are 10 nanometer. It's like the new X299 refresh, not 10 nanometer. The new desktop CPUs coming in 2020, not 10 nanometer. The new Comet Lake CPUs, not 10 nanometer. Although they do have the backported LPDDR4X controller from the 10 nanometer CPUs, but it's on the 14 nanometer process.
The other weird thing about this is, performance-wise, stacked up to Ice Lake, this is almost the same offering. However, some little changes like power and some of the base clocks and the turbo clocks are a little different. But when you factor in the old graphics processing, which these don't have the new one, like the sexy new one that was on the Ice Lake, you get basically the same performance. So why would anybody buy this?
The same performance as last gen, you mean?
No, I mean like if you bought the higher performing Comet Lake, when you factor in the graphics.
Oh, it's the same.
The real world experience is probably going to be similar.
Well, the Ice Lake is also only up to 4 cores, 4 threads right now. So if you want more than a 4 core, 4 thread laptop, 10 nanometers is not in your future.
Weird. It's a weird... You almost wonder if... Like, do they know they're not going to be able to get enough of those 10 nanometers out there to satisfy demand?
You almost wonder if the Intel 10th generation is some sort of very expensive PR stunt where, like, 2 out of, like, 50 CPUs in the stack are 10 nanometers.
And you're never going to be able to get one. But when you go to Best Buy, and you're like, I was reading about this, and I want this, and they're like, well, we're sold out of those. But look at this. It's almost the same. I'll give it to you for $100 less. Not good news. In a time when Intel needs more good news, not good news.
Facebook.
Let's talk about security.
Okay. Facebook. Facebook is first up with they've awarded $100,000. That's a prize for a new code isolation technique. Facebook awards the 2019 Internet Defense Prize to a team of German researchers for their work on Arum. So this is a way to compute values on a computer in a secure way where maybe the computer is not fully trustworthy, or maybe other processes on the computer are not fully trustworthy. So if somebody has access to the computation as it's happening, can we mitigate the fact that somebody might have had access to that transaction and still keep that transaction private while it's being computed?
Very important, considering we now have,
Spectre and Meltdown
and virtualization.
Yeah.
So when your cryptographic key is in the processor being processed, who's looking at it? Can you trust that? Now, this is not unique in terms of this has been, other people have come up with ways to do this, but they were all extremely expensive, and this one isn't.
And that's computationally expensive.
That's why it's worth $100,000. Well, it's not expensive in terms of actually doing it either. It doesn't require any hardware changes, and it works on all x86.
I sense an Intel job in their future.
What a terrible waste. So that's cool. And for once, a positive Facebook headline. They actually moved things to a more secure world. Amazing. Remember when Apple and literally everybody else was listening to those recordings? Not just listening to them, but the grunts in the warehouse were just sitting there listening to them and transcribing them. Well, that's stopped Presumably, but now we have more details about how prolific it was, and it's incredible.
The Verge tells us that Apple contractors were allegedly listening to 1,000 Siri recordings a day each. That's about two per minute.
Imagine how brutal that lifestyle is. You imagine getting up in the morning and knowing that you're going to sit down and listen to 1,000 Siri recordings. And you're going to have to pay attention to them because you have to transcribe them or something else.
That seems really scary.
It's better than watching people kill lizards, but only just. If you're a programmer these days, you almost surely use libraries to make your life easier. It doesn't make sense to reinvent the wheel every single time. And you build on the shoulders of giants, as it were. Unfortunately, you have to trust those libraries, and time after time we see that that could be a mistake.
ZDNet tells us that backdoor code has been found in 11 Ruby libraries. RubyGems staff have removed 18 malicious Ruby libraries, library versions that have been downloaded 3,584 times since July 8th. Kind of expected that number to be higher. I guess it was caught relatively quickly, but this is kind of... this class of vulnerabilities is being termed open source supply chain attacks. So it turns out that any modern app, like especially web applications, depend on dozens, if not hundreds, of external libraries. You know, Node.js, npm, that whole enchilada, and this is the RubyGems thing, Python, even Go. And so unless somebody's really keeping an eye on what people are doing with that, it is entirely possible for a bad actor to get in there and add all sorts of terrible stuff to those libraries. And people might not notice right away.
In this case, that bad thing was, of course, cryptocurrency mining. That's what you do. And you can mine quite a bit of cryptocurrency if you have 3,500 instances of your library on various websites.
Well, and servers, too. It's like you download this cryptocurrency library and just run it, and it's like, wow.
Now, REST client was the big one. That's the one that you're going to use most often. These other ones were not... I mean, you see these are coin-related, some of them. So probably, it's like in the 200s of times. But still...
The Coinbase interface and the blockchain wallet. It's a little worrisome. I'm glad that, like, if I had to choose between, something mining and something stealing my wallet because, it was using the blockchain wallet thing, mining is okay. At least they didn't steal my wallet.
Yeah, but imagine if you spent days trying to track down what the performance hit your site was taking.
Now all of a sudden the server can only service 5 people, and before we had like 50,000 people. What's going on?
You'd be pretty upset.
Yeah.
And that could be like, that could ultimately cost you more than your bitcoins just in the time you waste trying to fix it. So Steam usually has really good PR. Everybody loves Steam. I don't know how Gaben did it. He introduced DRM and made us love it. I don't know. He's brilliant. But they don't always get it right. Remember that time we had to come back from vacation early? What did they do?
Oh, yeah.
Was it to do with the refunds?
He came back from vacation. I'm sure the people in the comments will tell us. There's your engagement challenge, but yeah.
Well, they've stumbled again.
Researcher publishes a second Steam 0 day after getting banned on Valve's bug bounty program. Valve gets heavily criticized for mishandling a critical bug report. So this security researcher was known to the Valve bug bounty program, and he's like, hey, I think this is a bug, I think this is a bug, I think this is a bug. And some of the Valve people didn't agree that some of the things were actually bugs. The last one that was found was a local privilege escalation exploit, which means that Steam is doing something with privileges, and an unprivileged application can convince the thing that has privileges to do something it shouldn't do. And so he pointed that out, and they said, oh, this isn't exploitable except by somebody that has physical access to the machine. And it's like, what? No, I can get somebody to do this if they just click a link or, download and run a program. You don't have to have physical access to the machine. You can totally do it any number of other ways. And so Valve has walked it back. Valve is like, oh, mea culpa, sorry, we should have handled this differently.
Yeah. So they fixed that first one, even though they claimed it wasn't a security issue. But they didn't give him his bounty, and they banned him when he complained. So he just released the next one into the wild immediately. And that
whoops.
That was embarrassing. So, yeah. I imagine you do have to... if you are, you know, devil's advocate here, if you are the person who's working the bug bounty program, you get so many false hits, people trying to cash in.
So many crazies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that security researchers are not the most socially aware group.
No.
So maybe give them some latitude. But then again, maybe not. I mean, they are insanely rich. I can spread some of that around, right? Personally, I've given them so much. MoviePass. MoviePass was a bad idea. It was a bad idea at first. It was poorly executed. And when it began to fail, it was almost criminal what they did. And you'd think that, okay, that's as bad as it's going to get. What else could they do wrong? Well, they say, hold my beer.
MoviePass exposed thousands of unencrypted customer card numbers. Yeah, so MoviePass had an open database. In the app.
So these aren't necessarily credit cards for the payment of your account. These are the MoviePass cards. Now, MoviePass cards are literally just debit cards. So what happens is you go in the app and you pick a movie, and then it communicates with the theater, and the theater says that this movie's $15. So they put $15 onto your MoviePass card, and you swipe it, so it's nothing special. Well, these cards are the ones that were exposed. In plain text, by the way.
Good job.
Not just the last four digits. The whole card. With names and addresses.
Are they back yet?
Who?
MoviePass. Weren't they shut down for a while to like regroup or restructure or
I
something?
I don't think they're ever coming back.
Wow.
Because they can't. Like it's not a business model that's ever going to work. Tracking on the web. Now, if you're a new viewer to the Level 1 News, you'll know that for a while, we resisted ad blocking. And we still only do the most basic bitch of ad blocking, Adblock Plus. And we do that for a reason, and people complain constantly. But it's like, okay, we are using these websites, and we're sort of rehashing the news, which is not something new. Your local news station does this every day. But we should try to give, you know, throw them a bone if at all possible. We had to stop doing that because the tracking scripts are so aggressive. They will destroy a browser with 20 or 30 of these major news sites opened in tabs. Literally, it will just stop working because they're so crazy. And WebKit has seen that as well.
WebKit Tracking Prevention Policy. This document describes the web tracking practices that WebKit believes, as a matter of policy, should be prevented by default on web browsers. Yeah, so this is a very long document that is... it's kind of exciting, really, as a developer, like, working on some of this kind of stuff. They're like, look, we've had enough. This is insane. We're just going to block all of this. And it's like, this type of tracking is not okay. And like, if you find a technological circumvention for doing this kind of tracking, we're just going to block it without even announcing that we're going to block it.
So here they list some of the various kinds of tracking that they're going to get rid of. Now, they also mention that, this might affect some of these kinds of things. So like measuring the effectiveness of advertising. And their response to that is, we don't care. It's so bad. Yeah, this might disrupt your business model, but your business model is horrible. So deal with it. They also talk about like buttons. I mean, Facebook has to hate this news.
Yeah. I think that there are actually a lot of Fortune 500 companies have invested a lot of money in their platforms. I mean, Adobe in particular has invested a lot of money in bringing together tracking scripts and content management so that you have quote-unquote relevant content for your interests across the web on properties that are managed with Adobe products. And this is going to torpedo that as soon as it's implemented. So like any kind of functionality where content on a website is tailored to all of your tracking nonsense, that's gone. It was already a no-no to do that in GDPR land, but now it's not going to be possible with WebKit-based browsers.
Oh, those poor companies. I feel so bad for them. Oh, it just breaks my heart. that they might have to suffer
horribly
for this.
Does your company use Adobe stuff? Because it's going to be bad.
We talk a lot about Internet of Things. We're not fans, just to sum it up. And we're not fans because it's stupid to put certain things on the internet. Because the Ukrainians are out there, and they will find it. And maybe that happened here with these smart ovens.
Smart ovens have been turning on overnight and preheating to 400 degrees. June oven owners are reporting preheating incidents. Of course, the June CEO came out and said, no, this is user error.
But so he reported his thing about the user error is he says that it was kind of like a fat finger type of thing.
While they're sleeping.
He was like, yeah, you might be browsing through your previous cooks because, of course, right, you just sit in your bed and it's like, oh, let's go through the memory lane of all the things I've cooked this week. And then you might fat finger the preheat the oven button, which what kind of UI puts the preheat the oven button on the browser for the previous cooks? That seems suspicious. But yeah, like you point out, these people were asleep. They weren't using their phones. One guy made potatoes and he made his potatoes and took them out of the oven and let the oven cool down. But then he put them back in just to store them in the oven. Forgot about them. Woke up the next morning, black potatoes, just crispy. I would imagine a smoke alarm probably would have been engaged there.
Yeah.
He needs to invest in smoke alarms.
It turns out you can vaporize a potato in a microwave, except for the skin.
So, well, this is a convection, but still, I'm sure that you can get pretty close. So, and he said, thank God for the potatoes, because if I didn't smell the char, I might not have realized this thing was on before I left the house for work.
Wow. Yeah, it's got to be user error though, right? Here's the fix. So we will need to upgrade the GPS so that the June app can tell if you are actually in the kitchen of your house. We need that level of GPS accuracy. And it also needs to integrate with the Nest cameras from Google so they can get a visual on if you're in the kitchen.
But yeah, at that point, it's geared to your wife's phone, right? And she has to run out and get an ingredient that she forgot. And you're trying to cook. And the June is like, I don't think so, Dave.
The whole kitchen is just like, no. No.
Yeah, that is a terrible, terrible idea. Now, the idea, it does seem convenient to preheat your oven from your phone. Because it sucks to get out of bed and preheat the oven only to go back to bed for 15 minutes before you can cook your tendies. So it makes a lot of sense, yeah, but at what price?
Yeah.
Well, Friday, it's going to be... I've already forgotten. This was security, so it'll be social. Some interesting social stories this week.
Social nonsense and not Krista.
0% Krista.
I was kind of hoping that she would show up, but it was not to be.
Wait a minute. Is next week... Weekend, no. Next Sunday is not officially in August. So there's probably like a 40% chance she'll be here next week.